Welcome to the Sourcing Hero podcast, produced by UNA, a group purchasing organization that empowers sourcing heroes, and Art of Procurement, the world's largest procurement podcast network. I'm your host, Kelly Barner. The goal of the Sourcing Hero podcast is to capture the epic stories of people who are rising up and beating the odds to create exceptional value within procurement, directly from those heroes themselves. Today, my guest here on the Sourcing Hero podcast is Emily Sherio. Emily is the founder and CEO of Turbine, a lightweight ERP. A data engineer by training, she's now applying her skills to the supply chain space. Emily has seen the difference that shortening the data feedback cycle can make, whether you're talking about marketing or inventory management. So hi, Emily. Thank you so much for being with me.
Thanks, Kelly, so much for having me. I'm really happy to be here today.
So I gave a super high level about your background and training, about what you're doing now, but help us sort of fill out or round out the picture of your professional journey to this point.
I appreciate the question. You know, I'm originally from New Jersey. That's home sweet home, specifically the port of Newark. And my dad was, you know, he worked the port. He was a longshoreman. Supply chain and logistics were the backdrop to my life. In fact, if you look at pictures of my baptism as an infant, like in the backdrop, there are container ships and it says like Mar Terminals on them, or Maersk, or, you know, the big names. And so I grew up around freight and supply chain logistics, saw these things as like a very normal part of life where I was, and had all these what I would best describe as horror stories from watching my dad work around that. I saw my mom for the last 20 plus years has worked at Dunkin' Donuts, and I saw her do what today I would call inventory planning, but look at, you know, how many Boston cream were sold yesterday and how many French cruller, how many glazed donuts, and what do we predict we're going to need for tomorrow or the next day or the next week? Or, you know, thinking about special occasions like Halloween and how do Halloweens vary year to year. So kind of had those experiences. And then I did what any good kid does, which is that I tried to get away from freight and supply chain and logistics. And so I became a data engineer and I learned to code and I worked in B2B SaaS and really loved it. But I kept being called to, like, I kept feeling this opportunity to change the way companies fundamentally worked. When I was at Smile Direct Club, and I saw just how hard it was for people to do their day-to-day jobs where, you know, Maria on our operations team didn't know how many aligners were being produced or how many she could expect. And not having that information just had so many cascading effects throughout the organization. I really walked away with that, not just seeing the power of data, but really seeing the power of operational data. So the difference to me, when you think about analytics, when you think about reporting, it's almost always historical, like backwards facing. How many things happened last month or last week even? But no one's saying, like, how do we adjust right now? How do we use live information to adjust? And that's the piece that's really different. I think we're going to talk about time horizons and feedback loops in a little bit. But I think the thing that I've really come to appreciate is that technology is an enabler. And when we think about supply chain, where 20 years ago, people were doing things like truck routing manually by hand, map of the US in their head and just kind of routing it out. Now we have apps like Uber that do routing, 40 bajillion times a minute, right? And so how do we make sure we're leveraging technology where it makes sense, but not inserting technology in for the sake of technology? I think that's the real balance to strike. And I would say that's something I've been trying to do, not just in my current role, but that's the thread between my career.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. I will say before we really focus on sort of the data piece and feedback loops,
I'm not sure which piece of your family background I'm more jealous of, growing up so close to the ports or having a mom that works at Dunkin' Donuts. I'm in the Boston area. Very first Dunkin' Donuts was in Quincy, Mass. We consider ourselves God's country. As a result, you can literally give directions by Dunkin' Donuts here, and people do all the time. So we may have another conversation we need to come back to at some point. We need to dig into the Dunkin' Donuts background just as much as the supply chain background.
Yeah, it's been over 20 years. And so you give directions by Dunkin' Donuts. I have life milestone by what the Dunkin' Donuts uniform was at that time. So I remember my mom started, they were wearing these like checkered shirts, like a orange and maroon checkered shirts, yes, as managers. And then I think then they went to the black uniforms, where it was like black and white. And then they went to the, I think the orange and red shirts with khaki pants. Then there were the jeans uniforms, and now I don't even know. I remember when lattes came out, and I remember when culottes came out. It's a a different kind of milestone.
we could time loan all of this. You know, we talked about, you know, people hand mapping out freight routes, and then you switch to Uber and the technology that underlies it. I'm sure we could do absolutely the same analysis based on the progression of Dunkin' Donuts, which is very high to the top of the priority list in my book. but let's go back to data for a minute. So you talked about speed of data and what can be done, and specifically how that relates to supply chain. Let me start by asking you sort of a typical business process kind of question. Something like simply closing the books can lead to an information delay of a couple of months. Why is that such a problem for most companies?
Yeah, let's run through a real world example, because I think that's going to paint the picture and kind of unambiguously make it clear. So imagine that today is, let's call it October 6th. You go to your favorite shoe company and you place an order for a pair of new black shoes. You walk out, you go to the gas station, or you place an order online. You go to the gas station and swipe your credit card, and your credit card gets stolen. You cancel your credit card. And because when you're dealing with all the canceled credit cards a week later, you forget that you ordered those new shoes. You also challenge that transaction. Mm-hmm. And so now the company has shipped you shoes and they're out the money,
yeah,
from the shoes that they've sent you. So they're lost twice. And really what they have to do is fight to keep that money either with the credit card company or come to you and kind of explain the situation so that you drop the challenge. Too often what happens is, what did I say it was, October 6th?
Yes.
Too often people don't do or reconcile that process to realize there was a problem with that transaction until they're closing the books. So October 6th was when that transaction happened. The end of October happens, and then companies try to close their books within 10-ish days. Mm-hmm. So let's say it's November 10th, maybe November 12th, by the time someone's realizing this is a problem. And at that point, it's just like too late. You've worn in the soles on the shoes. Like, what are they going to do about it? And the hardest part for companies is that it's almost impossible to recognize that there could be a different reality, because everything about accounting is backwards looking. No one's right. Doing accounting real time.
Now, if you can speed up that cycle, I mean, I think your example about the shoes is great. So presumably, if you can speed up that cycle before the company acknowledges the disputed charge and says, okay, sorry, our bad, we'll put the money back in your account, they would instead be able to say, no, we shipped you the shoes, and not refund that cash. Is that sort of how that example plays out when we're speeding up the data feedback loop?
Yeah, there's a couple of different ways, but that's definitely one of them. Another is just catching it before it's sent out of the warehouse, right? If that credit card transaction is canceled right away or clawed back right away, you can catch it before you fulfill those shoes. And those items never leave your warehouse. There are a lot of different ways. We estimate based on our industry data that 3 to 5% of top line revenue is lost to problems in the order to cash process.
Wow.
So that's everything from customers placing order, that payment being collected, the payout being received, order and those items being delivered to the customer. So that could be problems in how orders are transmitted to the fulfillment team. That could be problems to what's actually being fulfilled. I don't know about you, but I just opened a box from Walmart at my house last week. True story, where we have a box of Suave Spider-Man shampoo that showed up at my house. Like, I was so confused by it that I went into the Walmart app to try to figure out, did I accidentally order this? Did my husband order it? Did, you know, what's going on here? And it was an accident. We got shipped an extra thing, right? And so someone else is missing their Suave Spider-Man shampoo probably. And Walmart's going to have to ship that again to keep them happy. And I'm not going to send it back. I mean, I let them know they sent me an extra thing and they said, thanks so much, right? But these are, we think of these as anecdotes, and they are. But the more we talk to people, the more we realize that these are patterns across everyone's supply chain. And the sooner you can catch them, the better off you are. I'll give you another example of a common problem is an order gets placed. For some reason or another, it doesn't get fulfilled. And oftentimes that gets caught when you get an angry customer support email. What if instead you had an alert for any order that was placed and not fulfilled in 3 days, 5 days, whatever it might be for your brand, right? That's a way of flipping what is today a circumstance that's almost reactionary, right? At that point where you're getting that customer support message, the customer's upset, they're angry.
Yeah.
Maybe they weren't like checking their email every day looking for an update. And so now it's been 2 months and they're pissed off. That's very different from you catching it at the 5 day mark, bringing it up to your team, and then maybe proactively communicating with the customer, sorry for the delay, here's a 10% discount on your next order.
Now, it's interesting because I can relate to all three of these examples. The shoes issue, the disputing the charge, the Spider-Man shampoo, absolutely, not that specifically, but I've had some weird stuff I did not order show up at my house for sure. And then, of course, it's everybody's nightmare that an order that is paid for does not get fulfilled and you don't find out about it until anger comes into the conversation. How is it in such a digital data-driven time, supply chains in particular got to the point where these issues are so systemic?
There's a lot of duct tape and gum keeping systems together. You know, I hate to say it. And yeah. You know, I'm an engineer by trade, so I pride myself on great technology, but I'm going to use Walmart. I don't know anything about Walmart, but I think they're a good example to point to. Think about how long Walmart has been around. Now, they actually have cutting edge technology and are really pushing the limits in a wonderful way. But so many companies, for a company like Walmart, they may not see technology as a true differentiator, and so they don't invest in technology. I was talking to someone today who was sharing like they have a handful of engineers on their internal team because technology is not core to what they're building. So they have a handful of engineers and they have to decide, do we implement some new technology around generative AI so you can see what this shirt might look like on you? Or do we implement the shipping API that could cut our shipping bill down by 10%.
Yeah. And you know which way that's going to break. Yeah.
Right. And so it's just a very keeping technology when it's core infrastructure, when it's like the thing that the business needs to run up to date and up and running is incredibly difficult. And if your differentiator is not technology, it's very hard to justify those sorts of investments. That's why companies should never aim to build this stuff in-house. Mm. Like, you're so much better off buying off the shelf because you can customize the last mile, where you're maintaining a system is so much more of a burdensome investment for companies.
Well, and I'm going to go out on a limb too and say it's even worse than duct tape and bubble gum. My guess is that the tape and the gum are stuck to a spreadsheet, right? So it's not even about, like, did you build a system? Did you buy a system? Did you implement it right? It's that we're using spreadsheets to plug holes for things that they really were not designed to fill.
You know, I have what I would call a love-hate relationship with spreadsheets. Spreadsheets are incredibly phenomenal tools. I was just talking with a brand that's doing $150 million in revenue a year, and their entire demand planning process is in a spreadsheet. And she was sharing her screen and showing me, like, here's where the cells in yellow are the ones that I can edit, and those numbers are going to cascade throughout the whole system. And I said to her, like, wow, this is amazing. How many people have access to it? And she said, two. We had to lock down permissions because people kept breaking this spreadsheet. Oh. She also told me that in their particular case, what happens is that people who don't have permissions but want to see what would happen, you know, kind of like a scenario analysis, they make a copy of the spreadsheet, and then they share that copy of the spreadsheet with someone else. And what's actually happening around the org, even though there's this one, you know, blessed version of the spreadsheet, there's actually like 40 other copies of it going around, and nobody knows what each copy is, and they never get folded back in. So, and the copies aren't kept up to date with the blessed version. And so you just have this sprawl because spreadsheets are incredible tools. Microsoft Excel is the greatest software ever invented because you can use it to do anything. But that same flexibility is, in a lot of ways, its curse.
Yeah.
When I talk to people and they're like, oh, you know, how do we know when we're ready to graduate from spreadsheets? I often ask them, like, what is it about the spreadsheet that hurts? And, you know, I had a conversation with someone where she said, the person who maintained this spreadsheet was on vacation. We didn't realize that we had to check this box, and it ended up costing the business $30,000 of inventory that we didn't need, right? Like, okay, so there's an actual cost not having a real system here. And that's kind of the question for businesses. It's like, do you know what problems you're solving with this spreadsheet, or you're still figuring that out? And I want everyone to push the limits of spreadsheets, right? Like, really understand the problems you're trying to solve first and foremost. But then once you've done that, you know the problem, you know the process, you know exactly what you're trying to do with it, then start to see if, like, it's going to take you to the next level, or what are the inflection points where it's going to break, and be looking a step ahead. You know, so many things at work, planning your vacation even, we can sometimes get so bogged down in the thing that is on fire right now that we forget to look ahead and see what's coming down the pipe. I'll give an example, kind of share where we are on timeline. Today is January 22nd. We're about 3 weeks away from Valentine's Day. I only realized that we were 3 weeks away from Valentine's Day because I went grocery shopping this weekend and all the Valentine's Day stuff.
I thought you were going to say the Easter things out were, and the Valentine's Day things were already gone.
So close. I'm sure that'll be next weekend. But, you know, if you're thinking about dinner reservations or a hotel trip, these are all things that, looking ahead, we don't have to do anything. You don't have to make your dinner reservations right now. But if you start thinking about it right now, you can make your dinner reservations next week. And I think that's the same way, is like, if you just recognize the limits of your spreadsheet, you can look ahead and say, and here are the areas where we're really going to need extra TLC.
Yeah. And sometimes that's an area where having someone else's eyes, borrowing someone else's experience can make a difference. So I'm interested, as you and your team work with companies to bring their spend and their business transactions under management, improve some of the challenges that they're dealing with, what's one of the top things that tends to come as a surprise that you're able to tell them about their business simply because you're looking at their business from sort of a different pair of shoes?
Pretty consistently, it's the same. And I like to use the example of a jar of peanut butter because it's pretty relatable to everyone. So a jar of peanut butter, if you think about it, it's made of a jar, it's made of a lid, and it's made of a fill, like the peanut butter inside, mm-hmm. and a label on the outside, right? So oftentimes when I work with brands, I'll say to them, okay, you buy a jar, you buy a label, you buy a lid. Let's say you're paying a dollar each just to make the hypothetical math easy. You send those three items to your co-man in Georgia. And then you pay that co-man $2 to produce the fill and fill the jar. And then you're going to send it to your co-man in or to your 3PL in Tennessee who's going to actually fulfill it to your customers. So how much did it cost you to make a jar of peanut butter? And they look at me. Sometimes they pull out their fingers and they count. One for the jar, one for the lid, one for the label,
yeah.
two for the fill, and they say $5. And then I remind them, you bought those three things and you sent them to your co-man, and then you took the finished product from your co-man and you sent them to your 3PL. And so if you think it costs you $5 to produce that jar, but then when you factor in shipping mm-hmm. or freight costs, it's actually $5.75. And you're like 15, I'm trying to do math in my head live, but 15% off in your COGS.
Yeah. In a product with a notoriously small profit margin. So mm-hmm. that much matters.
Yeah. And so across the board for our customers, what we see when we get started on really calculating their COGS and helping them get visibility into historical COGS is that the numbers are vastly different than what they anticipated. And it's not always vastly different one way or another. It's just different. And I think that's the piece that's important. Like, we have customers who before Turbine, they were calculating their COGS twice a year. And that was it. Like, they'd pick an April shipment and they'd pick a November shipment. They'd say, we're just going to go with this. And they use that in all their spreadsheet calculations. And maybe April was super high and November was super low. And so they yeah. even each other out or vice versa or whatever it might be. But there's a difference between being lucky when you pick your examples and having that live visibility into accurate data. And that's where we see the most reactions is just like, oh, I didn't realize this was consistently our number.
Yeah. Now, the last question I want to ask you sort of on the analytical front is sort of around general knowledge expectations. So we've talked about the fact that your background is in data engineering, but we've talked today about spreadsheets. We've talked today about counting on fingers, right? So there's clearly a whole range of options, everything from the bleeding edge, AI enabled, whatever it is, digital platform, all the way back down to fingers that have duct tape and chewing gum on them. What would you say is one realistic training or educational experience that generally everybody should find an opportunity to expose themselves to? Is there something analytically that can almost always help people sort of step up a level and either do more or be more comfortable with what's already happening?
I always tell people the best project for you is the one you're interested in. So budgeting is an example of where you have to look at patterns in the data and draw conclusions and make adjustments based off new information. If that's something that floats your boat, that's a great place to start. Lots of things you could do there. I knew someone who found some data on like crime and weather and found that to be super interesting. I have always been interested in athletic data. And so I've done analyses in the past on like my Peloton workouts and my reading data, like data I've pulled out of Goodreads. Lots of people do things on NFL. Like basically, it doesn't really matter the domain you're going to apply the skills to.
Yeah.
As long as you apply the skills, because if you can do it on NFL data, it's not that hard to take those same analytical skills and apply them to your supply chain data. The biggest thing is you have to do something you want to do if you're going to actually get better at using the skills. True. Instead of just like begrudgingly force yourself to go through some like Coursera course that who even knows what the value of it is.
Yeah, no, I think that's great advice. And especially if somebody isn't necessarily drawn naturally by themselves to doing something analytical, picking whether it's reading or exercise or whatever it happens to be, it could be calories, right? You could look at nutrition and do it that way. But if it has meaning to you in terms of its application, that's going to give you both the incentive to spend time on it and also to get it right, to look at your own work and think, okay, what about this does or does not make sense? Mm-hmm. You know, you can sort of relate and find different ways to improve your skills in that way.
Yeah, 100%.
So Emily, as we start to wrap down our time, I want to take you through a little exercise. This is something we do with everybody their first time on the Sourcing Hero podcast. I'm going to give you two questions. You can pick either one, and there are no wrong answers. So your choices are, what does the idea of a sourcing hero mean to you? Or what do you think heroism looks like in a business context?
It's interesting that we anchor on this idea of like heroism at work, and it's celebrated in so many ways, but oftentimes I worry that the circumstances that lead to what people think of as heroic actions at work are never addressed because we just like throw really talented people at these problems.
Yeah.
And so to me, rather than, you know, celebrate people who pull the heroics, for people who are watching, I have strong air quotes there. rather than celebrate those sorts of, we should be grateful that people do address those problems. Absolutely. But rather than celebrate it, I think the actual heroes in a work context are the people who do the less compelling, less likely to be celebrated work of solving the root cause and the underlying problems, right? It's, yes, we want to thank the engineer who got woken up at 2 a.m. and was able to keep the site up from some terrible hacker attack or whatever it might be in your business context. But we also want to make sure we're celebrating the engineer who's doing the work day in and day out to make sure you're the right IPs are whitelisted or flagged or whatever the preventative behaviors in your company might look like.
Well, I think that's an excellent way for us to wrap, because it actually means that absolutely anybody at any point, even listening right now, could be doing something heroic. If people have met you for the first time during this conversation or because they found this podcast somewhere and they would like to reach out and connect with you, have a conversation or learn more, what is the best way for them to get in touch?
Go check us out at helloturbine.com. You can book a demo. That's going to get you on my calendar. And so whether you want to talk about this conversation or you want to talk about Turbine or you want to talk about your own favorite data source to muck around your analytical skills on, I'm happy to carve out some time.
Awesome. Emily, thank you so much for being with me.
Thank you, Kelly, for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Sourcing Hero podcast. Join us again next time for more true stories of sourcing and business heroism performed by your colleagues and peers. Look for the Sourcing Hero wherever you get your podcasts, and don't forget to subscribe. Finally, don't forget, sourcing heroism is taking place all around us every day. Keep your eyes open and you're bound to see it. Until next time, I'm your host, Kelly Barner. Stay well and always remember that you can be a hero too.